Okay, we are continuing. I don't have the English over here. Was it 186, I believe?
Yes.
186, 185. We are four lines from the top, second word in. We are talking about the relationship between doing the mitzvah, the actual precept of the mitzvah, and the kavana behind the mitzvah. Hopefully we'll finish the chapter today, hopefully.
Yeah.
So, and he said that based on the premise that the mitzvah without kavana is like a body without a neshama.
Yes.
That's the whole deal. And he discussed mitzvahs. Yeah. And last time we talked about mitzvahs in dibur and the whole idea of bringing elokus down and where is it that the mitzvah is coming from. And okay. So we'll continue now. Continuing talking about the mitzvahs at... Oh, no, that's not drinking. That's for cake. That's for cooking. That's cooking whiskey. Okay. So even... Av sheshtehem kemitzvahs a kavanasa malubash ratzen echad pashir v'tachlis ha-pishitis b'lishum shin v'ribuch ha-sashon. So he says over here, both the physical performance, even as though it's true that the physical performance of the mitzvah and the kavana, what are they coming from?
From the body.
Where are they coming from? The idea of doing a mitzvah, where does it come from?
Hashem.
And the kavana, where does it come from?
Truthfully, it comes from Hashem.
Comes from Hashem. They both come from Hashem.
Right.
It's the same will.
Yeah.
That wants you to do the mitzvah is the same will that wants you to do the kavana involved with doing the mitzvah.
Right.
So what do you need the kavana for? You know, I'll do it, just do the mitzvah. Okay? I'm doing Ratzon Elyon.
It's for my benefit.
That's definitely true. But it does something to the whole thing. He will explain this. And it's totally, completely united. Both the physical precept, as long as he's going to say later on in the next chapter, as long as the person's not involved with ulterior motive in his doing of the mitzvah,
okay.
The mitzvah is going to fly. It's going to rise up, at least to the world of the spiritual world of a sea of action. Hmm. It's going to accomplish great things. Godliness is going to be brought into the world. Hmm. And a person's going to become united with Hashem. Depending on which mitzvah it is, what type of mitzvah it is, at least, the very least, it'll be like he said in chapter 4, like hugging the king. At the very least. But nonetheless, when you talk about like the liveliness of it, it's going to be the same thing in the relationship like a soul and a body. Where does the soul come from?
Shit.
Where does the body come from?
Sure.
But is there a difference between a body and a soul that's recognizable?
Of course.
So it's going to be the same deal. And he explains this in the note.
Mm-hmm.
That normally, generally, the purpose of a note is to bring like a side point to illuminate, either elucidate a question that you may have.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, it's a parenthetical statement just to explain what it is that he just said.
Clarification.
Yes, Kamosha goes about. The purpose of the notes is not to quote Kabbalah, even though most of the notes say, as is written in Eitz Chaim or something like that. But there are notes that don't say that. They're not explaining Kabbalah. It's just a side point.
Okay. Yeah.
Kamosha goes about Eitz Chaim. She kavana hamitzvah v'halaymetera hi mamadrigas or the kavana of the doing of the mitzvahs and the Talmud Torah. Excuse me. And the learning of the Torah, to learn about the mitzvah, that we're going to call Ur. We're going to call that revelation.
Right, okay.
The gufa mitzvah, and the actual performance of the precept, hey, madrigas of bechinas kelim, that we're going to call the vessel, the keli. Shehein bechinas tzimtzum. Then how do you get a keli? You get a keli through tzimtzum, shal yidei tzimtzum ha'or nishava ha'kelim ki'yidul yirichein. Through the revelation being contained, you wind up with a keli. Mm-hmm. And we talked about before what this idea, the definition of or and keli. The normal translation, that the way that we have the word he does it over here also, is vessel.
Mm.
It's not, it's true, a keli, a vessel is a keli.
Mm.
But what does the word vessel conjure up is something that you use for for holding something else, a cup, a pot, right, a bucket, right. Something like that. In Mishnayos Kelim, though, which there, that's the laws of what type of kelim are mekabel tuma, become ritually impure, and which ones don't, and why don't they.
Okay.
The word keli is defined as anything which has a use.
A use.
That's going to be the definition of keli.
Specific use.
A use. A hammer is a keli. A ladder is a keli. A planed board is a keli. A tree trunk is not a keli. A rock is not a keli.
A flat rock. Yeah, okay. Even though you could pick it up
you could
and
that
use
rock,
it for...
You could use that rock like a hammer, but that's not...
But it's not a keli.
That's not a keli.
I see. Okay? Okay, good. All right. Okay. Anything that has a use.
That's the definition of the word keli. You can have this piece too. So now, what it is now is the relationship then between or and keli. If you just, let's take the example of a hammer. Okay, you have a hammer. What do hammers do?
Hammer, bang.
Okay,
wrong. Hammers do nothing.
Hammers do nothing.
Nothing. Correct.
Okay.
Individuals do something with them.
Correct.
Right.
You have to pick up the hammer
and
then
it.
You can drive a nail with it.
Correct. Yes.
And why do you need the hammer? Because you're not one of those guys that can, like, you know, head
push
butt.
Him in with your thumb.
Yeah, you can't, you can't headbutt a ten penny nail into a 2x4.
Don't want to know. I don't want to know.
Okay.
If such people exist in the world, I'm sorry.
Anyway, so the so now what is it? Is there's an energy which is being transferred from the muscles in your arm into the handle of the keli, into the handle of the hammer, which is being then transferred into the head of the hammer, which is transferred into the head of the nail, which forces the nail into the wood.
Right.
So there's this like energy transference. So what it's starting out as is it's just this plain, you can use the word contraction of muscle, so to release this energy so that the final result is that the energy winds up in that nail which is now in that board.
Yeah.
That's really what the deal is with
Auris
and Kalim. You tell people right off the top, if you're thinking, you use the expression Aur and Kalim, light and vessel, and you're thinking about a glass of water, forget about it.
Oops.
It's not. It's absolutely, totally, completely not correct.
Okay. In that case, though, but the nail is also a Kalim.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. Right. Okay. Because, and you see that there's a whole process.
Yeah.
Because you had to go from your muscle, and it had to be the energy from the muscle, and whatever process there is, you had to get your arm to move like that. We're not going to go there.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, right.
Okay, and it's transferred from the handle to the head to the nail.
Right.
Okay. So there's a whole process there, and that's the way it is with Seder Istal Shalus as well. There's a process. Now, what happens is that we say the jargon is that the lower part of the light becomes the neshama for the keli. That's the chayas that gets enclosed in the keli.
Yes, all right, fine.
Okay.
Yes.
And what is the keli? The keli is
the recipient?
The recipient of it. But what is the keli? The keli is also comprised of energy. When you're talking in terms of, say, in Seder Histalshalus, the Kalim are made of the same energy, just in a lower level.
Okay, fine.
Now, if we were to look at, say, in a very acute subatomic level, and were to take away the three dimensions, and were to somehow we'll be able to analyze this act of driving a nail with a super electron microscope, ones that have not yet been built, that can see not just the subatomic particles, but can see the energy pods that comprise subatomic particles, what you would see is the muscles as energy
right
being transferred to the wood, which the wood now is also comprised of compressed contained energy.
Right.
I'm talking about in physics.
Yes.
Okay, which would then be transferred to the nail, which is also comprised and compressed energy. And you would see this transference of energy.
Yes.
From, which is this ore.
Right.
Starting out, originating from the muscle in the arm,
right,
and ending up in the nail.
Right. Okay.
Okay. But the nail is nothing more than just a bit of compressed energy.
Yes.
So when you're talking about the relationship between the mitzvah and the kavana, so what is the mitzvah? The mitzvah is an expression of divine will, but it's compressed into a three-dimensional object.
It's
tefillin that are made out of leather, mezuzah that's made out of parchment, tzitzis that's made out of wool, candles that are made out of wax. They are conveyors of divine will. As we said last week, such that once tefillin are made, they are holy.
The condition, yeah.
The candle, okay. The candle is a candle.
Great.
Okay, but the matzah that you're eating on the first night of Pesach, once you said the bracha on it, is now also holy.
It's condition.
Yeah. It's a conveyor of divine will.
Right, okay.
What's the kavana that he wanted to say? The kavana is a conveyance of divine will. So what you have is a higher expression of divine will, which that's the kavana, mm-hmm, and it's contained into this lower expression of divine will, the object. That's the relationship really between Oris and Kalim throughout the whole Seder Histalshus, the whole creation process. That's like really basically the whole purpose of Shar Yochid Ve'amunah, which is the next section of the Tanya. That's all one thing.
Right.
Because you see multiplicity in the world, but it really is.
Really.
But there really is no multiplicity.
Right.
It's really all just one plane of existence. Mm-hmm. The whole creation is just one plane of existence.
Mm-hmm.
We don't see it as such, but we call that
emuna. We live in it.
Yeah, we call it emuna.
Right.
Because if you could see how the world was energy, what would you see? Energy, nothing else.
Right, right.
Wouldn't be able to function. You wouldn't know where the table ended and you began.
Right.
Okay. So that's the deal now. When we say that, the expression is that a keli is his avus haor. His avus means a thickening. Thick light makes a keli. And if you're talking about
that's a very palpable expression of the whole thing.
Nothing like that exists in the physical world.
No, of course not.
There's no such thing as thick light. Sorry.
Of course, but in the dynamics of physics, where they've attempted to slow down light,
right?
You know, to the point where there's, you know, they're slowing down energy, hoping for it to achieve the state of matter, etc.
Right.
Fooling with it, but it's under in the realm of physics, it's a very tangible idea.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I don't want to run this rabbit trail too far, so cut me off. But the expression of spirituality into physical energy, that's a quantum leap, though, isn't it?
Well, for us to see it as such, yes.
Okay.
As it says, there's no greater yesh ma'ayin. That's the chiddush of the Arizal, because the remark, Moshe Cordovero, who was a big proponent of Seder Histalshus, said that it's basically one leads to the next, leads to the next, leads to the next, and the higher level becomes the lower level, which then becomes the higher level to the next level, so that the whole domino effect.
Mm-hmm.
So the result of domino B getting pushed by domino A is that it pushes domino C.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a whole lot of dominoes between us and God.
Yeah.
The Arizal says it doesn't work that way. It can't.
You can't get there from here.
You can't get there from here. You need a quantum leap.
Yeah.
And there is between each realm, each system, between each of the worlds,
there is a quantum leap. Right.
The greatest quantum leap is from spiritual to physical.
Asiya Ruchnius to Asiya Gashnius. That's the greatest leap.
Not
from Atsilas to above, up.
That's that you would think would be a very big one. You know, from the absolute essence of Hashem, where there is nothing but essence, to Atsilas. Even before Atsilas, but to Revelation. That's called Tzimtzum Arishon,
right.
First one.
Sure. Yeah.
So as great as, and there's a lot of writing there. Rizal writes a lot.
Yeah.
About Tzimtzum Arishon.
Right.
And calls this, he calls it Tzimtzum HaGadol, the great Tzimtzum, as Be'ein Aruch, it's no way comparable from before to after.
Right.
Nonetheless, he still says, the greatest Tzimtzum is from spiritual to physical. Because what happens, what's with Tzimtzum HaGadol? What is Tzimtzum HaGadol doing? It's creating spirituality.
Mm.
You remember the word spiritual, the word Ruchnius?
Mm.
Ruchnius is an adjective.
I hear it, yeah.
Okay, it's a noun, but it's a descriptive description of something. Hashem is not spiritual.
No.
Hashem is beyond, Hashem had to create spiritual.
Right, of course.
Okay, so Tzimtzum HaRishon created spiritual.
Right.
Now, in the different levels of spiritual, see, especially if you're talking about from before Tzimtzum HaRishon to after Tzimtzum HaRishon, the first Tzimtzum was what? That before the Tzimtzum, you had Hashem's infiniteness revealed and His finiteness concealed.
Concealed.
And after Tzimtzum HaRishon, Hashem's finiteness was revealed and His infiniteness was concealed.
Right.
Okay? And how big is Hashem's finiteness? It's infinite.
Infinite, just over.
Okay. So you can see then, there really is, he says it's Be'ein Aruch, but there is, at least in jargon, points of compatibility from before the first Tzimtzum to the after first Tzimtzum, because you're still left with an infinity.
Okay, I hear.
It's not a true infinity.
I hear.
Whereas from Malchus of Asiya Ruchnius, from the lowest level...
Infinity to truly Malchus, infinite, right.
There you're still talking levels of spirituality, things that have no parameters, no dimension,
right.
And then this
to
massive jump
to physical
to three dimensions.
Physical three dimensions, yeah.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
It doesn't get any bigger than that.
Yeah, I hear. Yeah. That's, you can't get there from here.
Correct.
Forget your Google Maps.
even Google Sky wouldn't work for this
you
one.
Got that right.
Hey, that'd be an interesting app. Google Histalshalus.
There you go.
I'm waiting for them to come up with that app.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. Beam me up. Okay. Back inside the body of the text.
Yeah.
Second narrow line.
Yeah.
The Nechleko Gamkein La Aru Madregus. And Nechlekes, excuse me. And this is also divided up into four different levels.
Okay.
Kigufa mitzvahs asman mamish hein base madregas. Because in the physical precept of the mitzvah, you got two things going on. Umitzvahs of teluas bedibur umachshava kamatama kutura vikriyishma atfilu berichos amazin vishara brachas. You have the actual performance of a mitzvah.
Yeah.
And then you have those mitzvahs which are dependent upon speech, like davening,
sure,
and kriya shma,
yeah,
brachas, learning, etc. And then you have the mitzvahs of machshava, which machshava and dibur really go together.
Yeah.
It's one thing. The amanas elikus, achdus abayra, these things, believing God is one.
Uh-huh.
And then you have kavanas a mitzvah, ledavka bo yizbarach. Then you have the kavana of the mitzvah, that this is kineshama leguf nechlekes gam kein l'shtei madregas. The kavana, which is like the neshama, is also divided into two divisions. L'shtei madregas kimei shtei madregas haneshama shehen kiguf hachomri shehen chayo medaber. Like you see that there's differences between an animal and a human being. Both of them have a nefesh. An animal has a soul, a human has a soul.
Right.
How do we know an animal has a soul? There's a rule, chai misnaneho es atzmo. If it's alive, it moves by itself. So a soul, an animal has a soul. But there's a difference between a soul enclosed in an animal's body and the soul which is enclosed in The human body. They're both called nefesh, but there's a big difference. So in kavana, you're also going to have a lower level of kavana, you might say a higher level of kavana. And he says, for example, how does that manifest itself?
In other words, moving by itself means it's not stationary?
It can move. I'm not talking about like a truck.
Well,
it can move.
But
the truck really isn't moving. You're moving the truck.
Right. No, I understand it. But here's where I was going. Because my thoughts are like a Venus flytrap.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it truly does move. But it's not. But it's not.
Okay, leaves blow too. There's a trigger thing that gets when it just kind of like closes. I don't know if you would call that movement per se, but it does talk in the books that there are intermediary steps between the different kingdoms.
Uh-huh.
And the Venus flytrap is given as an example.
I mean, it's one of a few different things.
Intermediary between plant and animal.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Because it does eat flies.
Yeah.
Yeah, so those things are talked about. Like there are types of rock and things like that do get bigger. They calcify, and as they calcify, they get bigger.
Right.
So those crystals and whatnot that grow.
That grow, yes.
So stalactites, these are considered to be like an intermediary between inanimate and plant.
Oh, really? I never thought. Interesting.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
And then in the... It talks about it in Chassidus all over the place, and I don't know if such a thing has ever been actually found.
Mm-hmm.
There's an animal called an Adnei Hasada, which means the lord of the field.
The one who's connected to the ground by the
umbilical cord. Yeah, it's highly poisonous.
Yeah, I thought it was extinct.
It could be. I don't know.
Who knows? Whatever.
It couldn't get very far,
it's
right?
Human-like, right? Supposedly.
Something like that. It looks like, you know, has human characteristics and... if you get near its umbilical cord, it'll kill you.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So, and there's different birds that grow in trees, this type of stuff. I mean, and then it says the intermediaries between human and man are apes.
Hmm.
It says this, you know, so.
Interesting.
Not just that we're saying there's such a thing called evolution, but that's just the way
that's the way they were created.
Okay. So now, what are the two levels of kavana? Basically, he calls them. There's an expression. What's the pasuk? I can't. Come on, brain, kick in. Zarasi nefesh. No, I planted souls. Nefesh behem. Nefesh adam. Nefesh behem. Nefesh. It's not nefesh behem. It's souls in man and souls in animals.
Oh.
It's the expression. I planted souls in man, souls in animals. And what's implied from the verse is that when he's talking about souls and animals, it's also talking about people. You have people who are called men, and you have people who are called animals.
Uh-huh.
Okay, the first level he's talking about here are people who are called people.
Right.
Well, what is that? Misha daita yafa ledasis Hashem, a person who has a good intellect.
Yeah.
He's b'ayin b'gedolus Hashem. He can sit and meditate on the greatness of Hashem. L'hayla mibinasa yira ilah b'maychay. To develop from his understanding a real high level of fear, which he's going to talk about this in chapter 40, 41, 42. He's going to talk about what is this higher level of fear, higher level of love, which he mentioned it a little bit at the beginning of chapter 4, is to have such a feeling of total humility in front of Hashem, to be like embarrassed in front of Hashem. The Av Hashem b'chol yaminish yabeliv aliyos nafshei tzamala Hashem l'davkibay, and that his heart should in the right ventricle and his should have a love which is causing a burning thirst to cleave to Hashem. Ayidei kiyum haTorah v'hamitzvos, which can only be quenched by learning Torah and doing mitzvahs. V'kavana zu hu laimit u'mekayim hamitzvahs. So this kavana is what's causing him to learn and fulfill the mitzvahs.
Mm-hmm.
This is his propeller behind it.
Uh-huh.
His motivation.
Yeah.
This is getting a little tricky over here because he's getting something out of it. He has a tremendous thirst for godliness, which is propelling him to do the mitzvahs.
Right.
And when he gets to do the mitzvah, his thirst is slaked. So he's getting something out of it.
Mm.
It's like there's sort of like this ulterior motive involved over here a little bit. And it was one of those questions was never, I remember asking you that many years ago and not getting a clear answer, because it says that a person who does a mitzvah for an ulterior motive, his mitzvahs don't fly. And here, this guy, what is his deal? His whole thing is that he wants to get closer to Hashem. So why is he doing the mitzvahs? Because I want to get closer to Hashem. Is that an ulterior motive?
Mm.
We're going to leave it with a tzarech ian to be discussed later when I finally do figure it out. And since I've been working on that problem for 35 years, it might be a while.
It seems to me that we're not capable of doing anything without an ulterior motive.
That's not true. You do a mitzvah because it needs to get done.
I hear, but even the desire to get, because it needs to get done, whatever you consider your desire to get it done, has it as a root and source in
that's true. I mean, the story with the Baal Shem Tov when he was told he wasn't going to get any Olam Haba. You know, I think we've told that story.
Yeah, I think so.
He went up to heaven and there was like a gezerah, a decree on one of the some town, and he went and he asked, "What is it about?" He said, "We're not going to tell you, because you're going to try and avert it." And he said, "Nah." And he said, "Swear." He swore. Uh-huh. And as soon as he went down, he said, you go to that town. And he averted the decree. And he came up next year and they said, "You have no portion in the whole world to come because you swore falsely." And he said, "That's terrific. Because now I can do the mitzvahs without thinking maybe there's an ulterior motive. I'm getting reward for it." So they had a whole conference and said, "Well, if that's the case, then we're giving you back your Olam Haba plus. So there, take that."
Yeah.
Okay, so you're right.
Kindness.
there might be some kind of ulterior motive of doing it, whatever.
Because we're human.
But, you know.
There's refined levels, though.
Shehain Hamshachos Vaharas Orein Seg Boruchu Al Nasha Ladav Kibo, that this causes there to be a derivative of a ray of the infiniteness of Hashem on his soul to cleave to Hashem. But Kavana Zu who Laimed and Makaima Mitzvahs, with this Kavana he's now learning and doing the mitzvahs. Became the Kavana Zu Mispalol Mavarech, and with this Kavana he's davening and he's saying brachos. This kavan is like a human soul. That he's talking with intellect behind it. This guy who's a behema, he doesn't have any das.
Right.
Behemas do have intellect. There's something called, there's a whole field in... There's a whole field of study called animal psychology, so trying to figure out what the animals are thinking, right? So somebody who has a small mind, for him to sit and meditate on the greatness of Hashem and give birth to a love and fear of Hashem, it's not happening.
Not happening.
He doesn't have the intellect, he doesn't have the tools, he doesn't have the patience.
Right.
He doesn't have the time. He can't do that either. What can he do? He's Jewish. So he knows he loves Hashem.
Yeah,
if you're Jewish, you love Hashem. Right. Like a person who came to the Tzemach Tzedek and said, Rabbi, I have sveikis and amuna. I have doubts in the existence of Hashem. So the Tzemach Tzedek said, "So why does that bother you?" And he said, "Rebbe, I'm Jewish." So he said, "You have nothing to worry about that." And he said, "Oy b'zayif, that's the case, you have nothing to worry about." Okay? Because this is a natural thing that's already hidden in the heart. And at least he can talk about it. He brings it out from the hidden recesses of his heart, which is his base. Hidden recesses of his heart is basically your will to survive.
Right, yeah.
And he brings that up at least into his conscience, but he's not feeling it in his heart. His heart is not going thump, 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 thump. That willingly he'd be able to, it doesn't make any intellectual sense, he would be able and willing to sacrifice his life,
yeah.
Excuse me, with absolute desire. Where he says, "Be'emes la mitoi," with absolute truth, not playing games.
Yeah, no games.
It says in the book, "I'm supposed to have mesiras nefesh." No, so okay, I'll have mesiras nefesh. No. This person really wants to give up his life for the cause. To be united to Hashem, kidei ledavik b'nafsho elokius uluvasheha, to cause his godly soul and its garments to cleave to Hashem, ulechalalim biyehuda va'achdusay, and to be incorporated in Hashem's oneness and unity. Shehu ratzon ha'elyon hamalubish b'talmud Torah v'kiyum mitzvos. And how is that oneness and unity expressed? It's the will which is enclosed in the study of Torah and the fulfillment of the mitzvahs. And in that love that he has to cleave to Hashem, there's the basic level of humility, at least of realizing Hashem is the boss. That's our low level of fear, which he's going to talk about in chapter 39 just a bit and bring up again in 41. To accept upon himself the yoke of heaven so as not to rebel against Hashem. That's our baseline for fear.
Right.
Hashem, you're the boss. The kavana zuhu sur mirav ase tov. That, how is this expressed? This kavana, at the very least, is I'm going to turn away from evil and I'm going to do good. V'leimed u'mespalol u'mevarech v'pirash amilos levadei. And at least what he's going to do now is going to propel him to learn and to daven and to say brachas, at least with the translation in mind, so that when he says barach, he knows that means bless, which means to draw godliness down. Atah, which means what Hashem is. Hashem, etc. B'lay dechil of arachim will be his galus libo amaycha. And he's not getting excited physically.
Yeah.
But he's going through the motions. He knows what he has to do.
Right.
So that person has, that's called also kavana.
Yeah, I hear.
But this guy's an animal. This is called Zera Adam.
Yeah.
This guy's like an animal. She'ena bal seichel ubechira. He has no intellect. He's got no free choice. They call me dice of shehen yira midvabrim umazikim oisei, and all of his midas that he's afraid of, and he's afraid of things that cause him damage. Va'avasel advarim and alhavim etzlei. And all of the things that he loves is because he wants to get close to them, because they'll give him pleasure. Heinrak tivim etzlo. That's all just natural. So his love for Hashem is
natural.
It's natural because I want to get close to Hashem.
Just natural love.
Yeah. I want to get close. It's a good thing to get close. So I want to get close to a good
beneficial
thing.
Beneficial to me.
Yeah. V'lami b'inasa v'dayte. And it's not coming from an intellectual arousalment.
Yeah.
V'kach hein al derech mashul ha'yira v'ha'ava ha'taviyas m'suteres v'leiv kol Yisrael. And this, by way of example, is love and fear, which is naturally hidden in the heart of every single Jew. And how is that so? He said back in chapter 18, ki hein Yerushalanim avaseinu k'mayteva v'nafshaseinu k'nizkar le'el. Because this is the nature of our soul. It's an inheritance to it. Avram, through his mesiras nefesh and promulgating monotheism, merited that his progeny should have a natural fear and love of Hashem. And guess what? We got it.
To
be continued.
Yeah. So I'm evidence in the